thank you, Hilary, and John and the other leaders who've greeted me. So it's really nice to be with you. Our church, Aldersbrook Baptist, it's quite small, smaller than this, and it's on the edge of Wanstead, sort of between Wanstead and Manor Park. And we also are in, just started an interregnum as well, so we know what you're going through. And I'm going to start with a reading from John chapter 5. And we'll just read this passage, John 5, from verse 1 to verse 10. Where it says, "After this, Jesus went to Jerusalem for a religious festival. Near the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there is a pool with five porches. In Hebrew, it is called Bethzatha. A large crowd of sick people were lying in the porches, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. A man was there who had been ill for 38 years. Jesus saw him lying there, and he knew that the man had been ill for such a long time. So he asked him, 'Do you want to get well?' The sick man answered, 'Sir, I have no one here to put me in the pool when the waters is stirred up. While I am trying to get in, somebody else gets there first.' Jesus said to him, 'Get up, pick up your mat and walk.' And immediately the man got well. He picked up his mat and started walking. The day this happened was the Sabbath. So the Jewish authorities told the man who had been healed, 'This is a Sabbath, and it's against our law for you to carry your mat.'" I'll stop there. Now, when we think of Jesus, we think of Christianity, which is fairly obvious. Our faith, our religion is based on Jesus' life and teachings and works. But Jesus wasn't a Christian. Jesus was a Jew. That might be a shock to you, but it probably isn't. But I want to ask the question, was Jesus a good Jew? And I think that depends a bit on your perspective. So we've just read this from John chapter 5, and the passage begins with, "After this, Jesus went to Jerusalem for a religious festival." And when we read the Gospels, we often read Jesus in the temple, Jesus in the synagogue, Jesus attending some festival or other. And it would appear that he followed the Jewish calendar and he observed all the different festivals and celebrated them, all the ones that were laid down for the Jews to follow. So it looks like he was a pretty good Jew. But if you asked the religious leaders in Israel at the time, you'd probably get a different opinion. Because when the passage starts after this, we need to look at what this was. And if you go back into chapter 4 to see what happened in the this, then it tells us that the first part of chapter 4 tells us that he travelled through Samaria. Samaria, they didn't like that place, full of what they term not proper Jews. I mean, they were sort of Jews, but not proper ones. And in fact, they were called Samaritans. They weren't even worthy of the name. And while he was there, he'd spoken with a woman. Now, that wasn't the done thing. I mean, no, we might not think anything of that. But then, for a Jew to speak to a woman just out in the open, that wasn't the done thing. And this wasn't just any woman. This was a woman with a reputation. You know, she'd had lots of different husbands. And the man, as Jesus said, that she was with at the time, wasn't even her husband. And then it tells us he'd returned home from there to Galilee, and he had helped a government official. Now, that government official might have been a Gentile, and might have been a Roman, a dirty Gentile. That's not good. Or at the very least, he was a collaborator, because he was working with the government, the with the Romans, and so, you know, we hear that term. It's bandied about recently in sort of politics, collaborator, and he's got very negative tone. So he's done that, and then he travelled back to Jerusalem again through Samaria. So that's not good. And he was approaching the city from the north, and as he heads towards the city to go through this gate that's very near the temple, he passes by these two pools, which are surrounded by these porches, these colonnades, these pillars. And he decided, for whatever reason, that he'd walk through that area. And traditionally, sick people gathered there and waited for the waters to be stirred up by God, and then you rush down. If you got in first, you got healed. That was the tradition. And just to remember that this day was a Saturday, which was the Sabbath for the Jews. And so Jesus wanders through these sick people. There must have been lots of them there, but he stops at one particular one and talks to him, and then he heals him. Obviously, this man's an invalid, can't get up, can't walk properly. And he says, get up, pick up your mat, walk. And he does. And so the guy picks his mat up that he'd been lying on and trots off. Now, that will be a time to celebrate. I think if we were in here, I don't know if we've got any disabled people in here, but if we've got somebody in here who couldn't walk, was in a wheelchair, and Jesus came along and said, get up, wheel your chair out, we'd all be clapping and shouting and celebrating. But so it's time to celebrate. But now the Jewish authorities, they're upset by what this man's doing. The scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, they were angry. This guy was breaking the rules. And so they sort of said, what are you doing? You're carrying a mat. You can't carry a mat on a Sunday. Oh, it's not Sunday, sorry, Saturday. You can't carry a mat on the Sabbath. And he said, well, the man who healed me told me to. I always think that's a bit of a sort of wimpish. You know, he didn't say, I'm healed. He went, well, he told me to do it. And when they find out that it was Jesus who told him, they're furious and they're thinking, it's him again. You know, it wasn't the first time that Jesus had clashed with them, and it's him again. And so what with breaking the taboos against speaking with women and Samaritans and Gentiles, and now working, as they call it, on the Sabbath, the religious leaders would have been really very clear that Jesus was a bad Jew. He wasn't a good Jew, he was a bad Jew. Didn't stick to the rules. And in verse 16 of the same chapter, we read, this is why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. So they were against him because he was doing this stuff on the Sabbath, on their special day. And it was a big deal for them. And so I want to read another passage, pick it up again in Mark chapter 2, where, again, there's another confrontation. And this is right at the end of Mark chapter 2, from verse 23. And Jesus, it says, Jesus was walking through some cornfields on the Sabbath. As his disciples walked along with him, they began to pick ears of corn. So the Pharisees said to Jesus, look, it's against our law for your disciples to do that on the Sabbath. Jesus answered, have you never read what David did that time when he needed something to eat? He and his men were hungry, so he went into the house of God and ate the bread offered to God. This happened when Abiathar was the high priest. And according to the law, only the priests may eat of this bread. But David ate it and even gave it to his men. Jesus concluded, the Sabbath was made for the good of human beings. They were not made for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for the good of human beings. They were not made for the Sabbath. And the Son of Man, that's Jesus, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And that's what I want to focus on today, the Sabbath. The Sabbath was established by God right from the beginning of creation. It tells us in Genesis chapter 2, it's told us of the creation and all the things that were made, including us. And it then says, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. God himself rested. Now, God didn't rest because he was tired. But he did it as the ultimate example to show us that this is a pattern to live by. And later that was codified, it was put into law and set down, where in Exodus it says in the Ten Commandments, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. And then in Leviticus it says, there are 6 days when you may work, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest, a day of sacred assembly. You're not to do any work wherever you live. It's a Sabbath to the Lord. And so God has set this out as a day of rest. But over time, God's people started to change that principle of a day of rest into a set of rules. Now, I have to be honest, we like rules. Sometimes we sort of say, oh, we don't like rules, whatever. And I admit there are some rules I don't like, but I like some rules because it means I can feel good about myself. It means, look, I stuck to that rule. And for the self-righteous, and there's a bit of self-righteous in all of us, rules are good things because we follow them and we can go, tick, I did that, I'm good. And it's the tendency we have to follow the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. And people were trying to define things so they could appear to keep the rules rather than living by the principle behind them. Now you remember, the principle that God has set for us is on the seventh day, you rest. It's about rest. The Sabbath was not made, human beings were not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for human beings, for people. The Sabbath is there for us to have rest. It's not there because we have to do something and honour the Sabbath and keep the Sabbath and obey. That's not like it. It's because we can rest. But we'd rather have little rules that we can tick off and go, yep, that's good. And the simple phrase in Leviticus that says, you're not to do any work. Well, okay, you're not to do any work. Well, we're very fortunate in the UK that generally most jobs don't require you to work on a Sunday. There are exceptions, but you're not to do any work. But Jews thought, we need to clarify that a bit. We need to understand what that means. And so they started to write down the Sabbath, or the word in Hebrew is Shabbat. They write down laws, and they set them out, and they still exist today. And Orthodox Jews still live by them. They're very complex, and even for Jews, they can be overwhelming. There's lots and lots and lots of detail. And I'm just going to give you a brief example of some of the Shabbat laws, which Orthodox Jews will follow. So there are some basics which you have to refrain from according to Shabbat law. You mustn't write or rub out or tear up. You mustn't drive or ride in a car or any other vehicle. You mustn't shop. Don't use the telephone. Don't turn anything on or off. Includes lights and or pretty much anything in your house. Can't turn it on or off. Don't cook, don't bake, don't make a fire. Don't do any gardening. I mean, when else would we do our gardening? I mean, Sunday, garden time. But don't do any gardening, don't mow your grass, don't do your laundry. And so they set these laws, but then they think, right, well, how are we going to live? How are we going to live? Can't turn anything on or off. So they set automatic timers for the Sabbath. So the lights come on. So they do that on the day before the Sabbath so that the lights come on at the right time. The oven comes on at the right time. The telly comes on at the right time. So they don't actually have to switch it on or off. And they're just trying to say, well, I followed the rule. I did not switch it on or off. And there's a Jewish website, well, there's probably many Jewish websites, but I found one that lays out the teaching and explains it. And this is a little quote from it. It says, the refrigerator may be used, but again, we have to ensure that its use does not engender any of the forbidden Shabbat activities. Thus, the fridge light should be disconnected before Shabbat by unscrewing the bulb a bit. Because otherwise, you open the door and you turn the light on, so you've broken Sabbath. So, day before, just loosen the bulb and so use the fridge with the dark. They're following the rules. Another example is two other things that are not permitted are using or touching items which are considered, if I say this right, mukzeh. And that means set aside. They're categorized as something. So you can't do that. You can't touch anything like that. And you can't carry anything outdoors, outside of your home. And over time, certain objects have been designated as this particular way, set aside by different religious leaders, and you're not allowed to move them. But, and I quote again, mukzeh objects may not be moved directly with one hand or even indirectly with another object. However, they may be moved in a very awkward, unusual manner with other parts of the body, e.g. with one's teeth or elbow, or by blowing on it. Now, I laughed as well when I first read this. I mean, what are you playing at? But they're sticking to the rules. The rules say you can't do this, but that bit's all right off. That bit's all right. And so they stick to the rules, tick the box, and say, I did not work on the Sabbath. You can't carry or transfer objects between a private place, like your home, and a public place, like the street. And you can't carry things in public for more than 6 feet, 4 cubits. And examples of carrying include carrying things in your pocket. So if you go out, you've got to have empty pockets, because if you're like me, you've got phone, wallet, keys, I'm carrying them. And wheeling a baby carriage, that counts as moving something. You can't chew gum because you're carrying the gum. But you can get around this by creating something called an Eirov, which is basically an area defined by a sort of string that sort of has been categorized as a private area, even though it might enclose, you know, half a dozen streets. And if you go to Jewish areas like Golders Green and places, if you look hard, you'll find these little strings going between posts defining the Eiruv. And somebody's come along and said, right, we'll put this here and we'll now call this a private place so you can carry stuff. Again, they're trying to tick the box, but actually let themselves do the stuff. Now, I'm using the Jewish examples because that's where Sabbath comes from originally. But I'm not criticizing the Jewish people. I'm not sort of saying, oh, they're all bad and look at us, we're much better. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm illustrating our tendency to try and find ways round things we don't like. The Sabbath, for most of us, has become, which is Sunday for most of us, it's supposed to be a day of rest. It's not a punishment to stop us enjoying our lives. It says in Romans 14, one person considers one day more sacred than another. Another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Paul is saying, look, there are these things knocking about, like Sabbath. you know, you think it's special and you've got to stick to it, well, fine. You think it's just another day, fine. And we can turn, like the Jews, we can turn what was meant to be a blessing, a day of rest, into a set of rules to be followed. And in Christianity, in church, we don't have that same sort of formalized list. You can't go to a book and go, rules for a Sabbath. Well, they probably are, actually. They're not adopted by everybody. Each church will have its own standards. And at the end of the day, it's the same legalism as those Pharisees who challenged Jesus. And it might include the fact that you have to give 10%. Exactly. And so, right, I earned £275.32, so that's £27.53. There's my tithe, exactly, what, 10%. That's not what tithing's about. It's not about giving exactly 10%. It's an attitude. We might abstain from alcohol. Some churches are very strong on that. And we say, you know, if you're a Christian, you shouldn't drink. Don't ever drink. It might include not buying anything, not doing any shopping on a Sunday. It might say that you can come to church and you can come to church events and lots of things at church, but do not go to a sporting event. Don't go to a football match. Do not go to Arsenal against Spurs this afternoon. No. I haven't got a ticket, so I won't. And it's really the Christian's half-hearted version of Pharisaism. You know, we're trying to be like that, but not all the way. And it's got little or nothing to do with God's principle of Sabbath rest. Paul said in Galatians 4, "Now you have come to know God, or rather be known by God, how can you turn back again to weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to become once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. I'm afraid I might have laboured in vain." He's saying, look, you know, you came to Christ through grace, through his mercy. You have been saved. And now you want to stick some rules there and say, I've got to live by this, I've got to live by that, I've got to live like this. You say, no, that's not the way of Christ. And when God instituted the Sabbath in Genesis 2, it says he rested on the seventh day from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. The Hebrew word translated, and he rested, that's the word from which we get Sabbath, Shabbat. And the word sanctified means to make holy, to set apart. God's saying, this is a special time for you to rest. That's what I want you to do, rest. And he gave us a day to be part of a pattern of our lives, to rest. And clearly Jesus shows us that there's no strict legalism in this. We don't have to do it in a particular way. We all intrinsically know what rest is. You know when you're resting. And it's important in today's culture to remember rest isn't the same as leisure. And this is where we often trip up. Rest is not leisure. You know, too often I fill my day of rest with leisure activities that I'll go off to an event like Spurs and Arsenal, or I'll drive to the seaside and do as much as I possibly can and rush back and get back late. How often have we been on holiday and had a wonderful time, done loads of stuff, and then said, I need a holiday to recover? It's the way we live, it's the way the world lives around us, and we just take it on board. That's not always rest. But that's not to say you can't do something leisurely, some leisure. There's not a rule that says, no, you can't go and play football, no, you can't go and do this, no, you can't have a game of golf, no, you can't go to the seaside. It's not saying that, it's saying rest. So if you want to jump in your car, have a little journey, go somewhere nice in the countryside, if you want to walk down the road into Victoria Park, have a picnic, that's all fine, because you're resting. But as I say, we know what rest is, and that's what God calls us to do, to rest. Our digital lifestyle. I've got my phone in there. I've got my iPad, which I'm not using because I didn't put the Good News Bible on it, but there we go. But it's not a rule that says don't use your stuff on a Sunday, don't have your Facebook on a Sunday. It's not saying any of that. Well, but it can just take over our lives. Oh, got another message. Oh, got another message. And we're not resting. And so we need to be aware of stuff like that and to remove those distractions that stop us from resting. I know, you know, I find it very difficult. Like, I go to bed, and before I go to bed, I'll make sure there's no outstanding anything's on my phone. I know some people, like, wake up through the night to check it. And that's not resting. Sabbath keeping means resting. It means being refreshed, giving your body and your mind a break, refocusing your life. You've had a week full of stuff. I'm sure all your lives are like mine in that they're just full of stuff, whatever that stuff is. It's not about coming to church. It's not about keeping rules. It's not about religion. It is about surrendering our choices to God and saying, I'm going to rest today, and I'm going to do it like this. It's letting God renew our souls. Albert Schweitzer, the doctor, the missionary, once said, if your soul has no Sunday, it becomes an orphan. So you might be physically in church, you might be physically doing something, but if you're not switching off, if you're not just switching off everything else and going, okay, God, here I am. If you're not doing that on a regular basis, then your soul is cut off from God. And I know I find I do that. All too often I cut myself off from God because I've got so many things to think about. So much to do. And so that's all I want to say to you this morning. That God has called us to rest one day a week. Whether it's Sunday. For those in leadership, for ministers, it's often impossible for... That's why they have a day off somewhere else. Because Sunday isn't restful at all. It's full of stuff. But that's okay. Because it's not a rule about it has to be Sunday. It's about one day a week having rest. Thank you. Father God, we thank you that you knew us before you made us. That you knew that we would need rest. You made us that way. And we thank you that you set us that example right from the beginning of resting one day in seven. Lord, help us not to fill our lives so full, even of good things, of useful things, but so full that we can't rest. Help us to just stop and receive from you, to be renewed and restored, and to live our lives in line with the way you made us to be.